Gil Alexander in San Francisco, Kelly Bidlin back in Vegas. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Patrick Kelly, if I'm looking that good on an 80-1, I'd get choked up too. Did I get choked up earlier? I don't know if I got choked up.
You were struggling a little bit. You're okay, though.
Oh, and was I really struggling? Yeah, I didn't even hear that. And then Ben McGovern. You know what could stop the Red Sox, Kelly? This. He said, today the Red Sox are likely rained out. Weather forecast is terrible. Hoping they schedule a doubleheader tomorrow. O's don't play in Boston for the rest of the season. So there's that.
Yeah. That's interesting. That could affect things.
Yeah. Could affect things. And if nothing else, with a doubleheader, you're more likely to have your streak stopped. Again, 14 in a row, franchise record 15. And then Dell Mind the Gap Radio, a Yankees fan that'll agree with Yankees not making the playoffs, but they will trade George Lombard Jr. and other prospects for Mason Miller. That'll change my mind. I think George Lombard is their one untouchable prospect, if I'm not mistaken. So there's that. Ladies and gentlemen, he is kind enough to join us as he does now every Tuesday on the show, and we appreciate it. He's the author of the Joe Sheehan newsletter. You can follow him on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan, and he has his stuff at joesheehan.com. It's Joe Sheehan, everybody. How you doing, Joe?
Good, Gilly. And I can tell you, you know, Boston's going to get some weather today. We're going to get some here in the city. Philly's going to be a mess. It's going to be like this all week on the East Coast.
Uh-oh. Maybe we spoke too soon.
Yeah.
Can you imagine losing this on weather?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, let's start there. Did you see, now look, no one saw 14 games in a row. No one saw that coming. But did you see that this team was ripe for a turnaround?
Yeah, I almost told Danny Higgins, just run all my clips about talking about the Red Sox and how they were going to make the playoffs from back in May and June, rather than come on, just run those clips. But no, I did think this team is having potential. And you know what surprises me, though, is they haven't done it with the offense. I thought the offense was going to bounce back, and it's been better in recent days, but it's been about the pitching, and it's been about really one of the best defenses in the league. Their run prevention has been exceptional. That's been the driving factor in this 14-game winning streak and in this run, too. Right now, they're a game and a half up for the third wild card, and they have a decent shot at catching whoever comes out of the Central for the second wild card. So, I mean, this is a team that's actually playing to its potential now. We'll see if they get Crochet and Anthony back. None of the news coming out of those camps is particularly good at this point. But right now, we're definitely not talking about the Red Sox as sellers. We're talking about them as a playoff team and how they can firm up that position.
Yeah, I mentioned that yesterday as well. Roman Anthony, Garrett Crochet, timeline still very murky on both of the Red Sox stars, both on the hill and at the plate. Trevor Story, Ranger Suarez, those guys more likely to come back a lot sooner here in the short term. Joe, Kelly and I went through make-miss playoff teams in the American League and National League last segment. We did the National League number one seed briefly. I think the Brewers probably have the best value at 4-1. What we didn't get to was the American League number one seed, and I'm glad you showed up for this, whether you want to be involved or not. There are the odds on the screen. This is the most flat-earth league I can ever remember at this point in a season. Where would you, if I said to you, Joe, you must make a bet here for the number one seed, the eventual number one seed in the American League, where does your money go?
Gil, sorry, you're breaking up. Can't hear you, buddy. Sorry. You know, there's no clear answer here because, you know, earlier in the year, the Yankees got off to the great start. They looked dominant. The Rays for a while looked dominant. All of these teams are pretty flawed right now. I think based on the rosters, the Mariners are probably the best team in this league, but they're pretty far back in the race, and they got a tough schedule coming in. And I mentioned schedule because you look at the Guardians, they're at 15-1. If you look at remaining schedules, not only do the Guardians have the easiest schedule of all the contenders in this league, they have the easiest schedule in baseball by about 15 points of winning percentage. So I don't think much of them, but you look at the offensive changes. Travis Bezzana coming up midseason, Chase DeLauder coming up at the start of the year. This isn't quite as bad an offense as it's been in recent years. And you look at, you know, Jose Ramirez should eventually be coming back as well. So if I had to make a bet here, and mercifully I don't, that's a thing to remember. You don't have to make any particular bet, but I might go with the Guardians here, even though they're, I believe, seven back, just because of the soft schedule, the likelihood of getting Ramirez back, and the fact that it is a better offense than we've typically seen from them.
Yeah, And even as a guy who has a pre-flop season win total under on them, I find myself nodding. Like, if you're going to make a bet here, you might as well take a longer shot or a middling shot like that for sure. And then the postseason becomes just fascinating because that's its own set of free-for-all where I do think then the Red Sox, if they can get in, emerge as one of these interesting teams where it's like, well, if you got 8-9 with Whitlock and Chapman and you can just shorten these to 7-inning games, your offense keeps sort of crescendoing. Who knows, right? It's that interesting in this league.
Well, the apple cart's going to get upset over the next 2 weeks. Trade deadline is actually 2 weeks from today. I think it's fascinating to see the teams that, as of today, we don't know where they're going to go. What are the Nationals going to do? What are the Cardinals going to do? What are the Twins going to do? But I do think we can say the Red Sox now are going to go out and add. These teams at the top of the board here that we're looking at, the Yankees, they're going to add probably not George Lombard for Mason Miller, hopefully, but go out and maybe get an extra. But one of the things, you look at the Rays, you look at the Guardians, they're not typically teams that go out and make a big addition to the trade deadline. The Rays' big move last year was that kind of strength for strength move, the Taj Bradley for Griffin Jacks trade. The Guardians, I can't remember. I think their last big pickup was Josh Donaldson in, what was that, 1976 or whenever they traded for him. So
yes, 76, you know, I think, teams, yeah.
These very good teams are led by front offices that are typically very passive at the deadline.
All right, we're just talking about the Pirates in the National League. Right now they inhabit the third, well, they don't quite inhabit yet, the third playoff position in the National League. They are just on the outside of that looking in, but by some measurements like Fangraphs, they are expected to inhabit the third wild card when all is said and done. You have a play on them today in the Bronx.
I do. I like their offense a lot. This is a team that's second in baseball in weighted runs created against right-handed pitching. The number tonight is over 4.5 at plus money at FanDuel. They're going up against Will Warren, who, you know, Warren's off to a very good start this year. He's been basically a number three, number four starter. But throughout his career, an 800 OPS and allowed against lefties. This year, 790. So even in his good year, he's been touched up by lefties. I like the Pirates to get over that number tonight. I mentioned earlier the weather here. It's going to be muggy. It's going to be nasty. And, you know, counterintuitively, the ball travels better in wet air. I know it's, it took me years to get my head around this, but the ball travels better in wet air. It should be a good hitting night for in the Bronx. And I like the Pirates to get over that number.
I picture an image of you pondering that subject. How is this happening? Wet air, this ball is going far. We joked all last year, Joe, when the Dodgers seemingly kept the Padres three back the entire season. It's starting to feel like that, those vibes in the NL East this year with the Braves and the Phillies. Braves have exactly a three-game lead over the Phillies. Braves are hosting the Padres. You have a play in this one.
Yeah, that Drake Baldwin game the other day really answered some questions. The Braves offense has been so bad for so long that, you know, they getting him back and getting him back on track has been important for them. So I think I picked that with Kelly last week. I gave out the Braves at plus 900 to miss the playoffs, and I'll stand by that. But certainly tonight, going up against Walker Buehler, who had a decent run in May and June, but just fundamentally isn't the pitcher he was a few years ago. He's more of a junk baller now. Guys, his fastball's being hit. 395 batting average, 630 slugging. You haven't seen numbers like that since I was pitching in the Bronx Federation in 1989. So give me the Braves first five to stay out of the bullpens at minus 132 over the Padres tonight.
What was your go-to pitch in the Bronx Federation, Joe?
I had that Bugs Bunny changeup. Unfortunately, it was my fastball.
That's such a great image. Who could forget the Bugs Bunny changeup? All right, and then a couple totals to round it out. You got the Reds Mariners under, and then a game that had tons of runs yesterday. You're going back to the over in the Dodgers Phillies.
Yeah, the under in Seattle is kind of playing the park in the history. Luis Castillo's made five starts at home this year. They're 4-1 to the under. If you look at the last 2 years, it's 17-10 to the under when he starts at home. Chase Burns lost a little bit at the end of the first half, but this long rest that he's gotten to his next start over the break, I think is going to help him out a lot. I don't see how these teams get to 8 runs tonight. It's 7.5 right now, and I would not be surprised if it was 7 by game time.
All right, and then Dodgers-Phillies?
Yeah, the Phillies are just terrible against left-handed pitching this year. 28th in the league in weighted on base. We saw Trey Turner get hit two homers last night, but you look at what they've gotten out of Alec Bohm, what they've gotten out of Edmundo Soso this year. They're just not a team that hits left-handers. And on the other side, you've got Zach Wheeler. You know, I mentioned the weather here on the East Coast. I'm kind of got a little bit against that here, but give me the under 9.5. You guys have it at 8.5 now in this game. Justin Robleski for the Dodgers and Zach Wheeler for the Phillies.
Joe, thank you so much. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, guys.
Joe Sheehan, everybody. The author of the Joe Sheehan newsletter. Again, check it out at Joe Sheehan or Joe_Sheehan on Twitter, I should say.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real. Mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
Drew Densick rejoins us once again, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, with his savagery, his savage tan, looking good in the LBC. Drew, before we get back to the National Football League, how's the Tour de France going for you?
It's going to be a winning tour. Assuming that Tadej Pogacar does not crash out in the five stages that remain. Six, because he hasn't really finished today. I have Remco Evenepoel, which again, if you are in trader mode, he's available at 76 cents. Sports fan mode, I think that works out to like -330. Remco Evenepoel wins stage 16. He is the best time trialer on tour. And I think ultimately he will be your second place rider in this year's Tour de France. If you're wondering what happened to Jonas Vingegaard, he crashed out, broke his collarbone. He's done. He got very lucky. Ooh. I think that he decided to ride the Giro d'Italia this year and be ultimately take home that prize, because we have seen the last of him for 2026 likely. Tadej Pogacar is going to win a Tour de France number 5. He is now in rare air among the greatest cyclists ever. Five is kind of the current high watermark since they took Lance Armstrong 7 away. So yes, Tadej Pogacar, I think, is clean through. The drama right now is mostly just who's going to win King of the Mountains. Can you have a guy like Carapaz come from the clouds and steal it? Who's going to get third? Pretty close race right now between two young guys, Paul Sexus and Isaac Del Toro, are going to race to the wire for third place. I would lean Del Toro there if you have a market for top three. I think he's, you know, just in general, Team UAE is going to try to make sure he gets on the podium. You can still get a decent price on that. It's been a fun tour. It's been a weird tour. There's been all kinds of weird doping stuff, like anti-doping testing, waking these guys up in the middle of the night. Like, you know, they have some sort of, kind of axe to grind. And I don't understand why to the degree I can tell you, they're all riding clean, or at least they're all riding with the same, you know, Tour de France is kind of like F1. You know, it's like you have a team of scientists who are getting you on the bike and in the best, kind of chemical condition to ride within the rules. And, from what I can tell you, there's nothing, no funny business going on. So, Pogacar, Slovenia's most recognized athlete in Slovenia.
Look at this guy.
Winning Tour de France number 5.
Gil, he is set to make 500,000 euros for winning the Tour de France. Ooh. Just a small dent in the 12 Jeez. Million that he takes home annually.
Oh, there you go.
I would have thought the Tour de France is worth way more. Apparently not.
Eat it, Luca. You're not the most famous Slovenian inside the confines of Slovenia. By the way, Drew, before we move on, can you name the four cyclists Luca that have won five
Luca Tour de France's? I'm sorry.
That's true.
Yeah, you know, winning five championships is better than winning zero, which I think is Luca's current count, right? The five. Eddie Merckx for sure. He's kind of the gold standard. And Miguel Indurain won five straight. Although yep. I look a little bit sideways at those, because the last couple of those was really when the chemical portion of the tour got a little squirrely. After Eddie Merckx and Miguel Indurain, you're going back to like the 40s, 30s, 20s, 10s. So that's
you probably would know Bernard Hinault.
Oh, France. Sure.
late 70s, early 80s.
Did Froome ever get five? I don't think he got five.
No. And then Jacques Anquetil in France, long time
Jacques
ago.
Jacques Anquetil, yes. Classic.
Okay, and then Pogačar would be the fifth. Okay, yeah. NFL, what has, I know you guys did the NFC East recently on the deep dive. Yeah, has anything, whether, I mean, you can seize on the NFC East or you can sort of ask, you know, answer more broadly. Has anything, and maybe the two meet, has anything really surprised you, either to the good or to the bad?
I was surprised at how low Andy, I was surprised at how low Andy was on the Washington Commanders, and he's not alone. Mm. There's a number of kind of folks in the Sharp community who are very out on the Commanders. I struggled with that one mightily because coming into last season, I had a rating on Jaden Daniels that was like top five. And his kind of, his clear, you know, kind of, positive, coherence with, Cliff Kingsbury, I thought was going to fuel them to at least, you know, an awesome offense last year. He gets hurt in week two. And I feel like that for that reason, his entire week, you know, year two campaign was an incomplete. So I coming into last year with such a high rating on him, I didn't want to just completely flush that number and come in with like a league average type of quarterback rating for Washington. And so much of my rating is upweighted based on quarterback and scheme, that, you know, I'm still like league average rating on Washington. Whereas I feel like a lot of people are ready to sell this team. The market in general, I think, is wildly high on the Giants. That looks like a very incomplete team to me. I am not buying at all that John Harbaugh, is going to have some sort of renaissance in New York. I feel like we do this a lot, coach kind of at the later stages of his career with a long run at a team. Finally they part ways and he lands somewhere new. I can't recall any, like especially positive outcomes here. So I'm not exactly sure what Harbaugh was adding to, you know, I would give, you know, Lamar Jackson, the Lions share the credit for Baltimore's team success, you know, in the later stages of that pairing. So I'm colder than the market on the Giants. I'm warmer than the market on the Commanders, although everybody is challenging me there. Cowboys and Eagles are fun because the Eagles are a high floor team, as mentioned, based on the fact that they're going to have a top six defense and that Vic Fangio is going to have that defense playing better in December than they're going to be in September. And in general, they have a very favorable schedule, the Eagles, that is. So the Eagles are going to get to 10-11 wins, I think, pretty comfortably. And then the Cowboys are kind of the interesting wild card because they have so much more upside with their offense being potentially much better than people realize. I want to kind of point out that, you know, the one of the secret coups of the 2025 hiring cycle was Brian Schottenheimer pulling Clayton Adams away from Arizona. He leaves Arizona and Arizona's running attack just completely craters to the point where they were, you know, wildly ineffectual. And then Dallas was able to pull an efficient, effective running attack out of whole cloth with a very, very questionable offensive line and weak running back room. And I give Clayton Adams a ton of that credit. And so if you can, you know, repeat that success with a running, you know, efficient running attack and take a little bit of the pressure off of Dak in terms of what you're asking him to do on, you know, late down and shorter, you know, third down completion distance with the weapons he's got, he's going to be, you know, absolutely awesome. So I think Cowboys have upside to be better than people realize. But the Eagles have a high floor. So both of those teams to me are playoff teams. And if you're going to kind of swing for the fences on one of the other right now, I would pick Cowboys because again, they have potentially a higher ceiling with their offense. So NFC East is going to be fun. I don't think you have a Super Bowl winner necessarily in that group. But give Cowboys probably the team that I'm the most excited to kind of rate once we see some real results.
Drewski, appreciate it as always. Congrats on Argentina making the finals, man. Appreciate it. Whew.
Best of luck, guys.
the sigh of relief. Let's talk some college football. Michael Montesano joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at the very, very thinly veiled, I'm in the gym 24/7, bets and reps. He joins us now to talk some college football with us. The initial Circa Booby Prize winner of $100,000, by the way, back in the pandemic year. How you doing, Michael?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me. It's that time of year again. Let's talk about some real football right now.
Let's talk about some real football. America. Let's do this. Let's talk college football. Clemson to make the conference title game, to make the ACC conference title game 7-1. You like this bet?
Yeah, I heard Adam Burke yesterday talking about, I think he's got them to win it. So I said, well, I guess all great minds are kind of think alike. I don't have him to win it, but there are a couple shops out there, FanDuel, BetMGM. I'm not sure anything in Vegas, what they have, but there is a market in to make the conference title game. And I took Clemson. I actually got 650 at FanDuel. I just checked BetMGM late last night. You could actually get 7-1. Not a lot of expectations this year from Dabo, and that might do him some well. Maybe keep some of his detractors off his back for a minute or two. But they are ninth in the conference in returning production, third in the conference in roster strength. They have 10 total starters back. Most of their talent is homegrown. If you look at Phil Steele's homegrown chart, they are number one in the conference in their homegrown chart, so they have some continuity there. The schedule is they miss SMU, they miss Louisville, they miss Virginia, they miss Pittsburgh, four of the top teams in the conference. SMU and Louisville have to play each other, so there's going to be a loss there. I have them favored in six of the eight conference games. They do have to play Miami, but they get Miami at home, so maybe we could pull an upset there, and they do go to Kelly's Florida State, where that is a toss-up game right there. If they can get 7-1, I don't know or understand. I guess you need a MIT degree to understand the tiebreakers and the ACC. But if they can get to 7-1, they have an excellent shot at getting to the conference title game. And at 7-1 or plus 650, I'll take my shot there.
It's so funny with college football schedules. I mean, I guess you could do this in schedules in every sport, really. But college football specifically, because it's the tightest schedule, how you can spin it either way. Like, you just spun it positively towards Clemson doing well. Or I could say it this way, right? A lot of teams they play that didn't go bowling last season, like Carolina, Syracuse, Kelly's FSU Seminoles, Va-Tech, Syracuse, probably all are improved this year. The road game at LSU to start, not good. And then they go to Cal on the road before they play Miami. Also Georgia Tech, Duke. So it's like, I could also spin it that way and be like, ooh, I don't know if this is going to be good, you know, with Clemson. So
I have them with my power ratings and it's all based on win probabilities. They are up there. Obviously SMU and Louisville are very good. And one of them are the odds favorite to get to the title game, but if one of them is going to have a loss, maybe one of them will have two losses. Clemson can sneak in with that one loss to Miami and we can cash the ticket.
All right. Speaking of Cal, which I believe I just mentioned in there, you have a play on Cal season win total.
Yeah, I jumped on Cal under 6.5 wins minus 120. I did improve their power rating by almost 2 points. So it's not from a lack of talent or a lack of a quality quarterback. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, but Jared is a very good quarterback at Cal. Right now, they only have 48% returning production. That's ranked 76th in the country. They only have three defensive starters back. They have a completely new coaching staff between the head coach and the assistant, the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator. They had 4 wins last year by 4 points or less. They finished 105th in my adjusted points per game margin model and 83rd in my adjusted scoring margin model. If you look at it, there's possible for some regression coming. They have two difficult non-conference games, UCLA at Syracuse. Overall, I have them favored in only 2 games with toss-ups in 4 and dogs of 4 or more in 6 games. So they're talented. The schedule isn't conducive for them. My numbers came out to 5.1 wins. If I get 6.5 at minus 120, I got some value there. And so I'm going to jump on Cal under the 6.5 wins.
You can't pronounce Sagapulatele. That's not your jam.
Not even going to try it. It's like Kelly trying to pronounce the tennis stars.
Hey, Burachaga's doing great. Okay.
Cal, by the way, misses Clemson, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Miami, NC State, Pitt, Syracuse, and Wake Forest. They miss all those teams on their schedule. Let's go to USC. You like them not only on the season win total over, but you like them on an alt over as well.
Yeah, so a little story. Yesterday, I was listening to Stormy and JVT, and they were Stormy's high on Penn State. She was talking about maybe taking their all win total at +160 over 9.5. Well, if they're going to go over 9.5 Penn State, why not just take them to make the college football playoff at +450? You'd have to think from the Big Ten, 10 wins will get them in. We'll kind of use that scenario for USC. If you look at USC, I'm really high on USC this year. It's Lincoln Riley's best team. He hired a tremendous defensive coordinator in Gary Patterson. He's got Jaden Maiva, which is a Heisman Trophy candidate, back. But if you look at the market to make the college football playoff, you got anywhere between +240 to +270. I think they're going to get to 10 wins, even though my numbers kind of shade a little bit less than that. I believe in this USC team this year, with three very, very difficult games against Indiana and Ohio State and Oregon. But if you believe in that, if you take the all over 9.5, 10 wins should get them in. If you go to DraftKings, that's +300. I'm gonna take that method right there, and USC will get to the conference playoffs.
USC,
excuse me, the college football playoff.
College football playoff and the alt over 9.5 wins. Am I reading that correctly? That's what you want also? Alt over 9.5?
No. Yes. Over 9.5 wins. That's the play. It's okay. Not to make the college football playoff. The play is over 9.5 wins, and that should get them there.
That still takes some onions because, as you pointed out, they don't miss anybody on that schedule. Penn State, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon, UW. And then Liberty to win Conference USA is also a bet from Mike at 3-1.
Real quick, Liberty to win Conference USA, 3-1. Number one in returning production, or number two in returning production, number one in roster strength. Regression's coming their way. They had four games where they lost really close last year. So we're gonna take Liberty.
Thank you, Mike. Ladies and gentlemen, you know who is not a super jerk? You know who's the opposite of a super jerk? Super nice guy. This dude completely nailed the home run derby last week, and we have not given him his flowers yet. It's Mark Borchardt, base winner, joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Gil. First of all, I'm going to give you flowers for this Red Sox monthly win thing. And somebody asked me yesterday, like, what were the odds that you put it out? I said 80-1. Am I giving you too much credit or not enough?
Yeah. No, that is correct. Okay. Bingo. 80-1 on the Red Sox. It just made sense to me. And so far, so good. I'll leave it at that. There's still time. There's still time to mess this up, including with weather tonight in Boston. So,
and you don't want me to bring up the epic Red Sox collapse of 1978 when they were 14 games up in July and ended up losing a playoff to the Yankees, Bucky Dent. I was thinking about that today. So, well, gosh, if Gil's in the catbird seat, as they would say, but if any team could pull defeat out of the jaws of victory, it would be those Red Sox, Gil. I'm not trying to jinx it or anything, right?
No, not at all. By the way, that's Bucky freaking Dent, I believe, is the correct way to say that name. I want to just real quick about the home run derby. And thank you for that, by the way. But the home run derby, you've written a piece on this now. I think it's kind of an annual thing that you do now. You didn't really care about handicapping the Derby about 5 years ago. Then you sort of started getting into it and you seized on this method. And here we are, like this year again, three picks. I think this is now 6 of 7 years where you've hit the winner, but you had three bets. The short shot was Kyle Schwarber. You bet on him. You bet on Jordan Walker, which was a middling shot at like 7-1, the eventual winner, Jordan Walker. And then you hit on Wilson Contreras as the long shot. Those three guys get to the semifinals. So the only person that could have beaten us was Caminero. He gets knocked out. So then it's Schwarber versus Walker. So it's just then a matter of, all right, let's knock out Schwarber because we make more money on Walker. You couldn't have handicapped this better. Can you just repeat for everybody for next year if they file it away? How do you handicap the Derby so well? What's your very simple strategy?
Oh, for sure. I can repeat this. It's exit velocity. And then I think I was doing ISO power at a balls in play, like, and then exit velocity on off-speed pitches. And it makes sense. And I remember like I spent a lot of time doing this, the hours in 2019, I started to do it, but I was like, hey, I want to play this. I want people to have like an educated opinion on it and a chance to win. And so that's what I came up with. And I did a lot of work on that in 2019, and it's really proved to be really good. And I think a lot of it's, you know, you group three guys, and so you have a chance throughout the rounds with that. And then you kind of Dutch bet it, but you still, even with those three guys, you got plus money. It was like plus 130 with those guys. So that was cool. And you're right, Gil. I mean, that's sweet when you're, they call it dormy in golf, but I guess it was better than dormy because you're not going to tie, you're going to win. So I felt dormy, yeah, right in the final. So it was cool. It's a really fun time. I think it's a good way to handicap it, Gil.
It was awesome, and it was great to see again you succeeding so brilliantly with such a simple, straightforward strategy. What did you end up with today in Major League Baseball?
Well, today I got a couple things, and maybe kind of segue a little bit to the division. But the first thing, gotta go with a base winner parlay, Philly and the Yankees. And if you're looking at this Philly game, I think this is a really good situation where you're taking a look at like Robleski's advanced numbers versus his sabermetric numbers. In fact, he was one of the guys. I did a post on my sabermetric pitchers to regress, and he was one of them. And against Wheeler, who I have as the number two base winner starting pitcher. So you start there, and then this Philly bullpen, number one in baseball. And then offensively, they're top 10. The Dodgers are number one in baseball, but the Phillies a number nine. And then we'll take a look just quickly at the Yankees. And I've got this game minus 176 is what the base winner line is. And it's about minus 150 in the market. So those two teams in a full game parlay, Philly and the Yankees, and it plays plus 189. But I did want to talk a little bit about the Phillies winning this division, because I'm showing good value with Philadelphia in this division. If you look at the simulations, I have them at minus 173. And I think that I'm just going to take a look at the DraftKings odds real quick. They're at plus 140. So I think that's real good value. And again, all those components go into the calculus. And so I think Philly is a good play there. And then talk about Houston today. I like them today. I got them at minus 149. They're in the market at minus 120. I've got Amaya at number 20 based on and it's machine learning with starting pitching that I do, and he's number 20. There's nothing totally wrong with Tyler Phillips. He's 72, 5% worse than an average pitcher. But I think what amazed me is that in the model, the overall model, I've got the Houston bullpen at 17, but now at home. Now this is what I'm looking at, the last 300 plate appearances for walks, the last 150 for strikeout percentage, last 150 for ground ball percentage. They've got a 2.9 base winner ERA, and that's best in baseball at home. So that doesn't even go into the calculation for the overall model, but that's kind of going into my head for this play tonight. And I think that Houston's a really good play today. And I also think that they're a good play in that division market. I've got them with a 22% chance to win. Take a look at a 26% chance to win that division. This is a wide open division, this AL West, Mariners, Rangers, and Astros. And again, this is not, you got to kind of do the subjective, are they going to trade their guys? But for me, I've got them at plus 277. And I think that they're sitting in the market right around plus 800. They're actually right plus 800 today. So those are a couple futures for you, a couple daily plays. And I think
like
that the math supports that for sure, Gil.
So the Astros, and again, Mark alluded to it, the model can't predict who ends up being a buyer or seller. But as currently constituted, you show value on the Astros, assuming that this roster remains consistent here. Real quick, because you talked about it earlier, I never got a chance to ask you. I wasn't here. Who were your sabermetric all-stars in the end, overperformers and underperformers?
Well, what I did, and there's a post on my site, what I did is I did offensive guys, top nine offensive guys, and then the starting pitcher skill. So that's all on my site.
Okay.
It's a real fun exercise. I love doing that. Every All-Star break, it kind of breaks up the lack of games. So of course, we had the World Cup this time, but
no, but I know what you mean.
Kind of a dead area. Yeah.
By the way, Mark, we have a Q3 derivative show coming up. We'll have to plan for that. It's what we're getting to the 120 game mark here in moments if we're not there already. We're almost
there.
Yeah,
I'm all for it. But just real quick, the guys who regress the most, I have number one, Nick Martinez, number two, Michael McGreevy. You might be grieving about some of your bets with him. And then number three, the guy who's pitching today, Robleski.
Okay. I send you off with this tweet from the elderly gambler who says, I really enjoy Mark's segments. I don't really bet much Major League Baseball, but his energy and smarts break through the ADHD. He just sounds trustworthy. Thanks, Mark. There you go. How about that?
That's awesome. I appreciate it. I love doing your show, Gil. It's great. And I love the feedback, especially when it's positive. It's great.
And Dustin texted me the other day. He's like, hey, can we get Mark on Mad Dog? I was like, of course you can. So check out Mark on Mad Dog Radio coming up as well. Thank you, sir.